Welcome back to the podcast. This week, we explore the connection between the heavy workload of being a student and caffeine consumption.
We also tee off with a profile on ASU golfer Josele Ballester.
I'm Nate Jarrah.
I'm Abby Bessinger. And this is State Press Play.
Also, this week, we answer the question, does ASU need more parking?
But first, State Press podcast reporter Tyler Abrams tells us more about the ASU golfer making big strides in his career.
ASU golfer Josele Ballester has built up quite a reputation with his time at ASU. Hailing from Castellón, Spain, the golfer has a 70.3 stroke average this season. I'm here with State Press senior reporter Jack Barron to tell us more. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Jack.
Thank you.
So, before coming to the U.S. to pursue his golf career, Josele Ballester had great success back home in Spain, right?
He did. Josele won the 2023 European Amateur last July with a 10-under 62 in the first round. He's also been shooting very well recently and finished top 14 at the Amir Ari Invitational in Hawaii in his last outing. He's even recorded a 70.3 stroke average. That's the third best on the team.
And you also mentioned in your article that Josele's parents are also former Olympians, which I'm sure with that kind of background, it contributes to a great athletic career. Tell us about how that upbringing shaped his family dynamic and his decision to come to the States to pursue his golfing career.
Yeah, his family's always been athletic focused. His father, Jose Luis Ballester, was a swimmer who went to three Olympic Games. His mom, Sonia, also played on Spain's field hockey team. She went to three Olympic Games and even won a gold medal in 1992 at Barcelona. His sister, Julia, is even a golfer at K-State. He's always been into sports as a kid and, you know, loved golf, even though neither of his parents played it professionally or for Spain. So golf's always been a big part of his life. But it was hard for Josele and his family to adjust to him playing golf in America, but his dad knows it was the right decision. His dad said, "I know that it takes a lot of effort to be away from home, but this is the best for my son."
Yes, it's tough for any student to pursue their career away from home. But for Josele, he's halfway across the world from his own family. How tough was that decision for him?
Right. The first few months Josele was in America were super hard on his family. It took some time for Josele to adjust to Arizona, but he's becoming a leader, you know, who wants to help his younger teammates. And it seems like, you know, ASU Golf couldn't be happier to have Josele. His spot on the roster, you know, stems from head coach Matt Thurman saying he's been circling Spain as a talent hotspot after golfers like Jon Rahm came to ASU. So Josele is a part of a long line of Spanish Sun Devils, and he's slowly becoming one of the best to tee off in Tempe.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's looking like as the season progresses, Josele's drive and determination are serving the Sun Devil golf team very well.
Yeah, he's playing great.
That was State Press senior reporter Jack Barron. You can check out his full story at statepress.com.
Energy drink culture is a popular scene on college campuses. Caffeine can have its positive and negative effects when trying to battle sleep. I sat down with State Press community reporter Anthony Vahar to explain the impact on students. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, Abby.
So, can you share a little bit about what the energy drink scene looks like at ASU?
Yeah, so I'm sure as you've seen and most people have seen on a college campus, energy drinks are littered around in people's hands, whether it's coffee cups or energy drinks. There's always some form of caffeine that students are using to keep themselves alert for a morning class and keep themselves awake for a late night study session. As you may have seen, kids in the library, students in, you know, the study rooms, they're all about. I think the scene here, there's more of a culture when you start digging a little deeper into it. And one aspect that really made me want to write this article was seeing the brand ambassadors that drive around in the Red Bull cars and, you know, hand out these energy drinks to students for free. And in talking to a lot of students, this seems to be a perk that is taken without question. And then, you know, maybe later down the line, some of these students are having a little bit of reservations about the caffeine they're consuming and what those ingredients are and what that looks like for them long term, the health impacts.
I totally see that. All the time when I'm on the campuses, trucks are giving students so much caffeine. So is there any correlation between the pressure of college and caffeine intake for students?
I think it's a big one. And in speaking to multiple students on this, there was a recurring theme of that pressure to fight sleep, to stay awake long nights, to write the paper that they need to get done, to study for the midterm, study for the finals. And a lot of people have part-time jobs, full-time jobs on top of that. I know a lot of people also have internships. So there's a lot of responsibilities in this stage of life, and there's a lot of things happening. So people are trying to keep up with those commitments and those responsibilities. So they'll oftentimes do whatever it takes to push through it and, you know, get those assignments done to get the grades they need, because there's bigger things riding on that. There's a lot on the line. There's scholarships, there's grades, there's graduation, a lot of pressures on a college campus.
Yeah, for sure. And after speaking with Kathleen Dixon, a clinical professor teaching food science and nutrition, what insights were they able to provide you that surprised you?
I think a lot of the health and the risk factors involved are things that a lot of people are, you know, at least mildly cognizant of, but she really emphasized the consumer in this relationship and the importance of the consumer taking that initiative to read those labels and do the proper research to know what they're intaking. This may vary depending on the amount of caffeine they're ingesting, the kind, the specific ingredients. There's a lot going on. You know, energy drinks are considered a stimulant. So to be handed that out for free on a college campus and intake as much as you feel is necessary to complete your coursework, that's a big undertaking. And oftentimes, you know, students don't necessarily have the background or the research or people around them to inform them of the nutritional aspect of this intake and the possible ramifications of that. But as a nutritionist, she really explored the more nuanced aspects of this caffeine consumption. But above all else, she spoke to the importance of understanding your own body, your own family medical history, and just doing that research in what you consume. And some of those risk factors we did talk about were cardiac arrhythmias as well as cardiac abnormalities. And those are some things to be cognizant of.
That's super interesting, and I feel like a lot of students aren't always aware of how their bodies are reacting to caffeine because they just need it so badly.
Mm-hmm.
So how should students analyze their relationship going forward with school and their caffeine consumption?
I think, you know, to mirror that sentiment that Professor Dixon really touched on is to do the research and to be mindful of what you're consuming and where it's coming from. The more I delved into this story, I started looking at the brand ambassadors that are coming to campus. And I actually found info online about positions that companies like Red Bull are assigning to students. They're hiring on college students to go onto these campuses and interact directly with the students to bring them these caffeinated beverages. And it's a big marketing tactic to provide this to a population that feels like they need it. And so in that, there's a lot of behind the scenes marketing and persuasion going on there. So above all else, I would advise people to consider what they're consuming, where it's coming from, why it's being handed to them specifically. I don't think we consider that most times when something's given to us free. And ASU does have a page on the ASU LiveWell page where they kind of break down caffeine, what it looks like, what the proper dosages are, alternatives to caffeine in different ways that it can affect your body, whether that be through a tolerance buildup, withdrawal. So ASU is also cognizant of this, but on a personal level, you know, be mindful, consider what you're intaking, and, you know, do the research if you feel you need to.
Well, Anthony, I totally agree with you. I think students moving forward should be more conscious about what they put into their bodies because we only get one.
That is true.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was State Press community reporter Anthony Bahar. You can check out his full story at statepress.com.
Parking at ASU is a hot topic. People often say that the university should increase the amount of parking spaces or lower their prices. Today, I'm here with State Press Editor-in-Chief Shane Brennan to explain just what ASU does to address these parking concerns across campus. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Shane.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's really nice to be on the podcast again.
So, Shane, answer the question. Does ASU need more parking?
No, it really doesn't. And according to an expert that I talked to at ASU, it really doesn't have the space. Not just ASU itself as a campus, but the entire city of Tempe is so built up at this point and so dense. There's really no room for it unless you build a parking structure up or down, which is incredibly expensive and not exactly the best use of land.
So elaborate on that a little bit, if you don't mind. Is it ASU that pays for the parking, or is it the state?
So actually, ASU, whenever they build a new project, whether it's on any of the four campuses, so they have two in Phoenix, West and downtown, they have one in Mesa, and they have one here in Tempe, the main one. Whenever they build a new project, they have to go through the city codes and the city parking requirements, which according to a Tempe spokesperson, varies by the project size, by what it is, by the scale, and that all kind of changes through the projects. Now, an expert that I talked to said that Tempe has been working hard to lower these parking requirements to the minimum that they can get. Phoenix is doing the same thing. And Tempe has made it abundantly clear that while they are building some new parking here and there, they have invested into many other alternative forms of transportation. So unless you're coming in from out of the city, there's really no reason to drive around.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Expanding in places that they actually can provide that transportation as opposed to parking.
Yeah.
But students, again, that are coming from outside of the city, is there really no hope for them for future parking?
I wouldn't say there's no hope at all. One of the main people who runs parking and transit services here at ASU said that parking and transit services reviews parking availability and use throughout the year. Although some lots are crowded at certain times, there is sufficient parking on campus currently. The university monitors campus growth projections and plans accordingly. And he gave the example of how ASU acquired a new parking garage in the downtown campus that is near the Sheridan and the News 12 building. It's the East Van Buren parking garage, and that was an example of how they're expanding. But that parking garage was already there. There's not no hope for more parking. It's really unclear on how much new parking is being built on campus. And the demand has gone down, according to an expert anyway, since the pandemic, actually. There really isn't any reason to do it, and ASU is not very excited to build more parking anyway.
And in your opinion, is that for the best?
Yeah. Of course, this comes with a lot of caveats, right? There's a lot of commuters in this campus. It's one of the biggest university campuses in the country. So if you live in Gilbert, Scottsdale, South Phoenix, North Phoenix, anywhere in Mesa, pretty much, it's not literally a long main street, you're going to need a car to get here. And that's just how Arizona's built. That's how the metro is built. And if you commute every day, you have another job in any of those areas that's not directly on the light rail line or with a very quick and accessible bus, you need a car. People want parking with that, obviously. But where the problem comes in is that there's residents here who live in Tempe or downtown Phoenix who don't have family here, who don't commute to jobs that need cars, who just have their cars just to have them. And while there's definitely things you need a car for while you live on campus, you don't need it to get everywhere. So I think that if you're paying the pretty large fee for a parking spot, which is actually pretty cheap compared to what they could charge you, you are kind of, in my opinion, wasting your money because Tempe has really increased its accessibility, its walkability, and it has both a streetcar and a light rail and a very robust bus system. So if you really want to get anywhere without a car, you really can pretty quickly. There's really no reason to have a car out here with the work that Tempe's put in. And Phoenix is starting to get to that point as well.
So even though people might be asking, why is there more parking coming up? Why is it so hard to find parking spaces in Tempe? You would argue people should focus on things such as walking, public transportation, maybe even carpooling.
Yeah, I think people always want parking close and cheap. But that's kind of the problem that we put ourselves in by building these cities to only have cars because there's only so many parking spots. Mm-hmm. And we can't make all of our city a big parking lot. We can't do it. That's kind of what has happened. And that's why I think it's good to kind of stem the amount of parking spots that we build so that and kind of keep the parking lots that we build new developments at a minimum because it makes the land in Tempe more useful and it encourages people to walk more, builds healthy habits, and it makes people get into the habit of using the public transportation that's available to them. Now, I do know of people who don't feel very safe on this public transportation, which one of the experts I talked to said was a very big problem. It's that kind of thing that needs to change, and that's a long-term change. But I feel like more people should be using the public transportation that's available to them. And now we even got self-driving cars driving around Tempe. And I mean, I don't love those. I mean, I've never taken one. I don't trust it.
The funniest thing is you could cut them off and they'll always yield to you.
It's weird.
That's a huge tip, by the way, guys. Always cut off Waymos.
Cut off Waymos. Trust them.
No, I just taking all that money out of construction and putting it into public transportation, I think is healthy for the city in the long run.
Yeah. And the land that's being used when they build these parking spots is not doing anything except for storing cars temporarily. No one's keeping their car there forever. And there's no real other use for that land. You have enough parking here. You really do. There's street parking up and down Tempe as well. And if you're a commuter and you need that spot, you need that spot. I get it. You need a car if you're getting here every day. But if you live here, if you live in a dorm and you don't need that car, you don't need the car. In fact, you're probably spending more money with the car than you would without it. Because you got to pay for the gas. You got to pay for the spot. You got to pay for whatever repair costs come with it. Because you've seen the drivers out here, you'll probably end up needing a repair.
It's so much more efficient in so many ways.
Yeah, and it's better for you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You see more of the community this way, you get active more. Everybody should walk. Take advantage of living in this walkable community while you have it, because when you're done with college and you might not have it anymore, you might miss having everything right at your fingertips.
Thank you, Shane, for coming in.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I love being on the podcast.
That was State Press Editor-in-Chief Shane Brennan. You can check out his full story at statepress.com. And that's all for this week's State Press Play. I'm Nate Jara.
And I'm Abby Bessinger. State Press Play is produced by our podcast desk editor, Gabriella Fernbaugh. Our original music by Ellie Willard and Jake LaRue.
Special thanks to our managing team, Alexis Heichman and Morgan Cabasco.
You can check out all these stories and more on statepress.com. See you next week, Devils.